Today is Monday, July 17th, 2006, and you are listening to Bits of Bryn. For Gigabits today, there's really nothing new to a report. I have a possible gig at a local celebrity's party, but that's not a for sure thing. I'm still preparing for the county fair on the 27th of July, and August 3rd is going to be so stressful because I am booked for the entertainment at a county fair on one side of the valley, and then on the same day, on the other side of the valley, I have an audition. It'll be fun to see how that works out. Time for music bits. I'm going to talk about the Dixie Chicks again. I'm going to touch up on some things that I didn't mention last week. First, a small little recap. As you know, Natalie Maines said some very controversial comments in 2003, and she was perceived as anti-American, and their sales weren't doing very good. People weren't buying their music. They were like going on strike because she offended a lot of people, but then she apologized. And this year, she retracted her apology right before the Dixie Chicks released their single, Not Ready to Make Nice, on the airwaves. And two stations I know of received so many complaints about that song that they pulled it from the rotation. And that is so big. But what I didn't mention last time is that the Dixie Chicks sold 797,000 copies of their album, and that's a commercial success. But their tours weren't selling enough tickets. But what I think happened is that they ticked off their old fan base because all those albums could have represented the fellow anti-Bushers who were showing support by buying the album. And industry scuttlebutt says that the girls didn't sell well in the red states, predominantly conservative and pro-Bush, and that's where most of their tours were. And so I think that's why their tours weren't doing very well. As I said last week, whenever you book a large venue, an artist needs to be able to bring in a certain amount of customers to pay for the rental of the venue, because this reimburses the owner, and anything over that is profit for the artist. And even though the Dixie Chicks were selling several thousand tickets, I'm sure they just weren't making enough to really make the show count for a profit, because everybody knows that the record label makes the money off the album sales, and the artist makes the money off the tours. And so I'm sure their label, Columbia, was happy that they got all the money from all those thousands of albums, but the Dixie Chicks have the short end of the stick because none of their tours are doing well. Only the Blue State tours are doing well, which is really weird because the Blue States aren't usually known for their love of country music because they're mostly urban states. So they're going to have to rework their whole tour to target the Blue States so they can actually make some money. And as I said last time, the Dixie Chicks have been saying a whole bunch of really rude things. And so in order to exercise their free speech, the Dixie Chicks have changed their fan base. It's like changing horses in midstream. You're going to fall into the river. And they're going to have to retool their entire tour. Oh my goodness. That's going to be a real pain in the neck for them, but they're already declining in their success, right? I mean, it's been 2 months since they released their album, and it hasn't even gone platinum once. I'm worried about them because it looks like their avenue of revenue is just drying up. Either the Dixie Chicks need to zip their lips or just hang up their mics for good and host a political talk show where they can rant all they want. For odds and ends today, I have currently discovered an artist that has made a big impression on me. And I know that most of my listeners are adults, and if you are an adult, then you've probably known about this particular artist for a very long time. Now, I'm the type of girl who will happily listen to what my parents listen to, because I'm not the type who will discount their opinions simply because they're my parents and thus aren't cool. I don't even know what's up with that. In my opinion, the music that they listened to when they were my age is ultimately cooler than the music of my generation. There was a huge variety of music, and all of them were wonderful and had unique things to offer. So I was sampling my father's music collection a few weeks ago, and I found a band that I really liked. I remember hearing about it a few times from my dad, and it was mentioned in the movie Footloose that I really liked. Now, I'm sure you're dying for me to say the name here. I've been stringing you along. Well, I discovered The Police, and I really liked their music, and I thought that the lead singer was especially talented. So I was reading through the dust jackets looking for the name of the lead singer and the songwriter. I was shocked when I found out it was the same person. I looked at the other four albums and saw that this person had written almost every single song on all five albums. This person's name is Sting. He really piqued my curiosity, so I did some research on him, and I am just amazed at him. He wrote all the albums for The Police, and I saw that he released over 20 solo albums of original music. Oh, wow. I just marvel at his prolificacy as a musician. He writes, he sings, he composes, he plays the guitar, the bass, the mandolin, and more. He's such an amazing musician. He's 53 years old and is on tour even as I record this podcast. I'm just amazed at his success. He's over 20 albums to his name, and he writes all of it. I can't imagine doing that. That's over 200 songs from your own pen. I would love to do something so amazing like that. I really want to aspire to writing all my own music and not just be a one-hit wonder. I want to have long-lasting success in the music industry, and all my music, every song, I want it to come from my heart. That to me is perfect. I have such a deep respect for Sting. He is everything I want to aspire to become. For open mic today, I have a segment from Super Tim on MySpace. Oh, there's lots of questions here. Let's read it. It says, Bryn, I have responded to your call. Several questions for you. Number one, who is your favorite American Idol contestant, winner or runner-up, and why? Number two, are you planning to be on American Idol anytime soon? Number three, any further music plans, CDs, singles, or anything like that? And number four, what is your favorite country song? The questions may sound trivial and stupid, but they are questions nonetheless. Your voice is beautiful, and I would buy your CD in a heartbeat. Cool beans, Tim, Salt Lake City. Start with question number one. Who is my favorite American Idol contestant and why? Well, I really, really like Kelly Clarkson because her voice is amazing, and the control she has over it just makes me jealous on so many levels. But Carrie Underwood, she's got a great, great country voice, and I love her music. Hillary Lindsay is a great songwriter, and she gave Carrie Underwood a lot of great songs. So I think it's a tie between Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson. For number two, am I planning to be on American Idol? Well, first of all, I can't be on American Idol until season 8 when I'm finally eligible for the age limit. But I don't know if... Well, right now I'm trying to get some music together, trying to write some songs. I guess that works into question number three. I'm trying to get four original songs together so I can release an EP. And then I'm going to continue writing, and hopefully I'll be able to get an original album out by the time I'm 15. So if my career takes off before I turn 16 and I get a record deal or whatever, then I won't have to be on American Idol. But if not, we'll see. I have to play it by ear. But number four, what's my favorite country song? Oh dear, that is like the hardest question to answer in the whole world. I've got like a thousand of them that I love. Right off the top of my head, I love I Can't Love You Anymore by Gary Nichols. I just love that song. The lyrics are wonderful. And I love Starts With a Goodbye by Carrie Underwood. And I like Ghost in the House by Alison Krauss. I just love all those good, great country songs that just break your heart. I think those are just, I just love listening to them because they're just crafted so well and they just make you cry. And I think that's a mark of a really good song. Thank you so much for those questions, Tim. I've been posting bulletins on MySpace all day long trying to get an open mic question. So thank you very much for sending me one in time for me to record it. For the rest of you, if you would please like to ask me a question, you can email it to me at bitsofbrin@gmail.com. That's BITZOFBRIN. And just have the subject be open mic so I won't read it ahead of time. And I'd love for you to ask me a question. I haven't been receiving too many this week. I don't want to have to beg for another question, so please send me one, all right? The song of the week this week is How's the World Treating You? This is originally an Elvis Presley song, but I heard it the first time on a CMT special with Alison Krauss and James Taylor. Then I forgot about it, but when I was trying to find some old music for my rest home gig, I came across it again when I was looking through the Elvis songs on iTunes. And I'm like, oh, I remember that song. And so I bought the minus track, and I'm going to sing it for you on the podcast. I really love the song. Elvis's rendition was really good too, but I loved the harmonies on Alison Krauss's and James Taylor's. So I did the melody and the harmony for you. I had a lot of fun recording that. I hope you enjoy it.
Turning, how's the world?